Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 393. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Have a great guest with me in the Tool Shed this episode. He is the lead prospect analyst and senior baseball editor over at RotoWire, at RealJRAnderson on Twitter. Mr. James Anderson joins me. And James, how are you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, Eric. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I think it's a good time to talk some prospect risers here. It's the beginning of June. You just had one of your big top 400 updates come out about a week ago, I believe it was, and I got mine coming out today on Monday when most everyone's listening to this. So we'll talk some prospect risers in this episode, a few intriguing recent debuts, and a couple other topics here too. But before we get into all of that, I'll get the usual housekeeping out of the way. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer. With Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass, gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout for 10% off. All right, so let's start with three kind of notable debuts, promotions over the last several days. A couple in Houston, but we'll start with the one in Seattle. Cole Young got the call and debuted over the weekend. Really slow start to the year for Cole Young in April. Didn't really do much of anything at the plate, but then he was red hot in the month of May leading up to the promotion. In May, he slashed .362, .464, .657 in 27 games, 18 extra base hits, five of which were home runs, four steals, and had over double as many walks as strikeouts, 17-8 there. James, you know, Cole Young is one of those, I think, prospects that people are pretty indecisive on. It's because he might have one of those, you know, better in real life than fantasy profiles. But what are your thoughts on Cole Young and what type of impact do you think he can make both short term and long term?
Yeah, I've never been that high on Young on my top 400. I think he's going to have a long big league career. I just don't see a very high fantasy ceiling with him due to what I perceive as, you know, lower end impact combined with a really bad future home park. I've compared his just overall skill set to Bryson Stott, but Bryson Stott in a worse park, although potentially with a better chance of being like a true everyday player throughout his whole career. So, you know, he's going to steal bases. at least whenever he kind of gets into a groove at the big league level. Like, I'm not sure if that's going to click right away, but I think, you know, whenever you see Cole Young settling in as a guy with a nice little runway of playing time, I think he's going to steal bases. I think he's going to work the count, maybe could be, you know, leadoff or number two hitter if there's injuries or if he's going really well, at least against righties. But I don't see him hitting more than, you know, 12 to 16 home runs as long as he's a Mariner.
Yeah, that's kind of where I've been at with him too. And I dropped him pretty far in my offseason rankings when I was going through, really digging into that Seattle system. And I think I probably dropped him too far. I'll fully admit that. But yeah, I've never been super high on him as you know, either. Like, the hit tool is solid. Like, you see the contact skills with him are good. It was 82% contact rate. You know, he walks a ton, doesn't strike out much. So like, this guy will probably give you, you know, a decent average in OBP at the major league level. But yeah, even though he has, you know, he's not a zero power wise, like, there is some power there. Like, he actually had a 44% hard hit rate in AAA this year, which is decent. But yeah, I always kind of thought 15 home runs. And then once you factor in Safeco, or is it still even called Safeco? I can't remember. But no, T-Mobile.
Yeah.
T-Mobile. I still call it Safeco many years later. But yeah, you factor in the home ballpark, and yeah, it's kind of a 10 to 12. So I'm right there with you. So, you know, decent, like, low end player. I think he's a, you know, like you said, have a long career and, you know, play 10 plus years in the majors. But for fantasy, it's just, you know, more of a low end, like, you know, solid back end of your roster guy, but probably no one you're ever going to be looking to draft in like the top 150 or anything like that. Next up, the two Houston guys, we get Jacob Melton and Shea Whitcomb, both getting called up by the Astros here over the weekend. Shea Whitcomb, I think he still led the minor league in home runs. He was going back and forth, but had 18 home runs in 53 games for Sugarland, 275, 357, 599 slash line. Now, this is a guy that I feel has always been a bit underrated. I mean, yeah, he's 26. He's old for a prospect, but guy that's always shown a good power speed blend. You know, made jumps last year in contact and walk rate, strikeout rate came down. And he's kind of kept those gains this year as well. Six steals as well, 23 walks to 50 strikeouts in 53 games. Kind of bounced all around the field, you know, playing basically every infield spot and a little outfield as well. You know, are you interested at all in Shea Whitcomb? He's another one where you either like him or you don't in the prospect world. So where do you stand on Shea Whitcomb?
Yeah, I guess I'd probably be on the lower end. I am sort of assuming he's a quad A hitter until he proves me wrong. You know, he was below league average his first time at double A, and then he handled that in a repeat trip as a 24-year-old, and then he was below league average his first time at triple A, and then he handled that in a repeat trip as a 25-year-old. Now he's in his third tour of triple A. We still haven't really seen him handle big league pitching. He hasn't gotten a ton of opportunities, but I think part of the reason he hasn't gotten a ton of opportunities is because the defense is a little lacking. So there's definitely like the raw power and the speed is there for sure. But I think he might just be a guy who has seen enough AAA pitching to put up good numbers in the PCL.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. And that's what I've been wondering too, is like, you know, even though he made the gains in contact and approach, like, do those stick in the major leagues, you know, when he's facing the best pitching in the world? I think you give him a full year, he could go 20-20, but is that with like a 210 average or something like that? Plus, like, I just don't know, like, where does he fit in long term with this Houston, you know, team? Because, like I said, he doesn't really have that one true defensive home. You know, do they slot him in at second base? They slot him in, play a little first base. Maybe he bounces around just as like a super utility guy. That's kind of what I think. But yeah, I think that hit tool is going to be everything for him. But if he can, you know, make at least respectable contact, then there could be some value there. But it's a kind of a fine line to walk with a profile like this. But the other one I'm definitely, you know, more interested in is Jacob Melton, you know, the outfield prospect. 23 home runs, 46 steals in 2023, 15 and 30 last year. This just around 100 games each year. This year, only had 17 games, for AAA Sugarland, but 2 home runs, 3 steals, 9 doubles too, 11 walks to 15 strikeouts, 254, 371, 508 slash line. You know, a lot of power here with Jacob Melton. I mean, small sample size, but he had a 59% hard hit rate and a 23% barrel rate with good contact skills as well. I mean, this is a guy that can kind of do it all across the board, you know, average to above average contact skills, good power speed blend that he's shown consistently throughout the minor leagues as well. So, yeah, I like Melton a lot, but where do you stand on Melton here? Do you think he can stick in this Astros outfield and, you know, be a fantasy viable player?
I think he's a much better prospect than Shea Whitcomb. Like, he's a good defender. He might be kind of like a tweener in terms of like center field or right field, but he's more than just like a left fielder or DH only type of guy, which is sort of what Whitcomb is. And Melton's, you know, a couple of years younger as well. He grades very well on the RotoWire hard hit data, especially just that he's more of like an age appropriate guy at AAA right now. And I think he's more of a OBP guy than a batting average guy, depending on your format, but definitely power and speed. And I like Zach DiZenzo. Part of the reason these guys are up is DiZenzo's on the IL, but like the Astros don't have a ton of guys I like. So I think there are definitely at bats to be had there.
Yeah. And then Alvarez and Sanky's that close to returning. Maybe a few weeks for Yordan. Hard to say. After the Tucker thing last year, I'm not even going to venture a guess when we see Yordan Alvarez. But even with DiZenzo out, like, I don't know. Like, long term, I like Melton. I think he could be, you know, an impactful fantasy outfielder long term. So, you know, dynasty leagues, I'd definitely be looking to buy Melton right now, you know, in trades. But short term, I mean, he got the start today on Sunday as we're recording this. Because Jacob Melton got the day off, but got the day off in center field. But Myers has been playing pretty well. You know, Smith's been starting regularly in right field. Altuve mostly in left field. The left field second base DH. So does Altuve move back to second base? You know, more so than left field, and that opens up a spot for Melton. I don't know. Like the short term, I don't know if I'd be looking to add him, you know, in any redraft leagues right now, but. Long term, I think Melton is a pretty solid buy, so I would definitely be looking to buy there. Next two guys here, before we get back to some prospect risers later on in the show, I want to talk some Coby Mayo and some Jordan Lawler from Baltimore and Arizona, respectively. Kind of the American League and National League poster boys right now for, you know, the guys that we want up, you know, full time. They've gotten a shot here and there. It's been pretty poor production at the major league level. And then they get sent back down to AAA, back up, back down. So I think I've had a lot of people asking me, and I'm sure you have as well, James, you know, like, you know, are these guys legit? Can they ever, you know, become that, you know, impact player for fantasy that we thought, you know, or we think both of them could be? And I think that's a valuable question right now. I think it's way too early to be out on them, but, you know, there's a lot of talent there and they've shown that in AAA, but haven't really shown that so far in the major leagues. Lawler is 4-for-50 so far with Arizona. He was 0-for-19 this year before getting optioned back to AAA. And Mayo is 6-for-56 so far. I don't know if you want to tackle both these at the same time or we can go one after another. But, you know, with Mayo and Lawler, are you still maybe looking to buy low in dynasty leagues? Or at this point, are you starting to fade these two guys?
So I think if you're the type of person who's pretty good at buying low or is interested in buying low on guys, you know, one thing to consider is that I do think it matters a little bit that with both Mayo and Lawler, the vast majority of those big league plate appearances have come in very sort of sporadic playing time where it's just kind of like they're playing every third day or they're playing every fourth day. And there's definitely a clear vibe that, you know, they could get optioned back to AAA basically at any moment and they're not playing regularly. So I think it's understandable that they could be pressing in those situations. So I think there's just a case just kind of on that very basic sort of human level to buy low on these guys because they haven't necessarily gotten like a fair runway to sort of, you know, make some mistakes and play through those mistakes and that type of thing. But I will say when I've seen Mayo like at the big league level, at least prior to this most recent call up, he has definitely looked like a guy who's pressing like big time. And then with Lawler, it just seems like any kind of okay breaking ball off the plate is going to get a strikeout out of him. And he's just not a very difficult out right now for big league pitchers. So, you know, I'm kind of two minds. It's sort of like buy low, but at, you know, how low? Like I lowered Mayo to 50th overall on my last update from about 10 days ago. And Lawler, he basically did that 0 for 19 and got sent back down basically after my update. But, you know, I don't think I'd have him top 20 anymore. I think you could, you know, the one nice thing about Lawler versus Mayo is at least Lawler has multiple paths to helping you. And, you know, it's just you almost never really want to fully give up on guys with his type of tools.
Yeah,
because he has the potential to steal 25 plus bases, and I think he has the potential to hit 25 plus homers, and he's going to be playing in up the middle position most likely. So he's going to get a lot of chances with teams, even if it's not Arizona. But with Mayo, he's not going to offer defensive value. So there's all that much more pressure on him to perform at the plate. So I'd be more interested in buying low on Lawler, I think. I think to a point you could buy low on either, but I also would only buy low to a point. Like, I don't think it's just like rush out. These guys are definitely going to turn the corner. I think there's reasons to be concerned.
Yeah. And what you were mentioning about the breaking balls, you know, pitchers were absolutely seeing that because Lawler got thrown breaking balls 46.5% of the time. He saw those more than he saw fastballs. It was 44.2% on fastballs. And he had a 52.2% whiff rate on breaking balls. Yeah, that's not going to get it done. And a 70% ground ball. So when he was hitting the ball, he was putting it into the ground anyway. But yeah, I mean, I'm more apt to, yeah, go after Lawler because even with, you know, I think Mayo's got a better bat, you know, and obviously he has, you know, more power. Maybe you can, you know, make a case for Lawler having the better hit tool, but Mayo doesn't steal bags, and at least Lawler does. So even if Lawler's, you know, a subpar bat or just doesn't turn out to be the offensive player we thought, he should still provide, you know, good amount of steals because he is a, you know, good athlete, premium athlete, and has always shown the willingness to run pretty often on the base path. So at least give you some value there and maybe even some, you know, dual eligibility too. We'll see kind of where he ends up. I still have no idea where that's going to be on the field with Arizona. We shall see. But yeah, I still have Lawler top 25. I'm still, as I'm going to finish tinkering with my rankings after we finished recording this, you know, I'm probably going to have him around 20 overall, I think. Mayo is more like in the, you know, he's probably going to be around 30, 31, something like that. But I still believe in both these guys to a degree, just because I think, you know, we tend to overreact to these early sample sizes. And sometimes it's, you know, good to overreact to these because we've seen other top guys that have kind of started like this just never figure it out. So I'm not saying they're going to, but you know, I think it's too early to kind of label these guys. I've seen people call them quad A talents, stuff like that. I think that's way too early. So yeah, I would lean more towards buying low as well, especially on Lawler, as I think he has that more, you know, all around skill set that I think would be pretty fun for fantasy if everything clicks. But all right, moving on here, talk some prospect risers from, you know, both of our updates. There's just several guys that James provided that he wanted to talk about, a few guys that I sprinkled in that I wanted to talk about. We will start with Arjun Namala from the Toronto Blue Jays, who I believe you put pretty high, if I recall. Yeah, you had him 13th overall in your last update from was May 22nd there. Namala's had, you know, obviously a very good year, currently in high A. Vancouver, 45 games, 289, 372, 528 slash line. A lot of extra base hits, 24 of them total, 14 doubles, 9 home runs, even stole 5 bags as well, 22 walks to 37 strikeouts in 207 plate appearances. I have him right now in the I think the 35-ish range. But again, James, you put him close to your top 10 overall. So what has you so high on Arjun Namala long term?
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Yeah, I feel very confident in what he's going to be. And it's not necessarily like first round type of fantasy upside, but he's just one of the best power hitting shortstop prospects that I can recall. He's not the burner on the bases that most middle infielders are, especially at his age, 19. He's going to be 19 this whole year. He's been at high A all season, and he's got a 239 ISO, 528 slug. And all, you know, if you had heard anyone talk about Namala during the offseason, his strikeouts would have been something that would have come up at least in the first few sentences. And
yep.
Most people know that he improved that strikeout rate down the stretch last year after getting sent back to complex ball. But for him to be at a 18% strikeout rate right now as one of the youngest players at high A's, definitely one of the youngest shortstops, even in A-ball. And, it's just really rare to see that type of growth from a hitter without the power like falling off. You know, sometimes it's like you're changing something to make more contact, but then the power dips and then you got to find a way to refine it. But he just seems like a guy who over the past 18 to 24 months has just been really developing and getting better and probably physically maturing significantly. And I think there's just nothing but positive things to say about him. He's not exactly like the perfect prospect just due to that speed factor, but I really like Namala.
Yeah. And I think he at least provides some speed. I mean, maybe it's only, 5 to 10 range, but I think it's not going to be like a 0 from him or like a 1 to 2, rogue steal here and there type of guy. And that's just like kind of like a little icing on top of that power profile that you mentioned, because yeah, he's only 19. He'll turn 20 mid October, and he's already plus power, maybe even above that. And I think he still has some projection left on his frame too. Like, a double plus power guy that's 30, 35 plus home runs annually from that shortstop spot, I think is definitely within play. Yeah, I think long-term, we've still got a ways to go. You probably won't even see him in the majors until maybe later next year. I think he might get a cup of coffee with AA later this year, and then probably AA, AAA next year, maybe a little bit of majors later in the year. We'll see how much Toronto wants to push him. But the power is 30 plus home runs, as I mentioned, and the contact skills have improved this year. Contact rate's gone up nearly 6%. Swing and strike rates come down about 2.5-3% as well. So, yeah, doing a lot. And you mentioned the K rate too, 18% and walking over 10% of the time. So, yeah, a lot of good. in that profile. And yeah, if this continues, I think I might be putting him up there kind of where you have him, you know, putting him top 20. You know, it's just definitely a really fun power profile, and you know, maybe some of the best raw power you'll see from anybody that's, you know, 18 or younger right now in the minor leagues. Next one here, we'll do one more Toronto guy, one that's a little less, you know, exciting for fantasy purposes, but someone that's had a pretty solid year. That's RJ Schreck, outfielder for Toronto, currently in AA New Hampshire, 269, 384, 530 slash line right now, with 6 doubles, 9 home runs, and 4 steals. Coming off a pretty solid year last year between high A and double A. Also came over from Seattle via trade last year, but overall had a 388 OBP last year, 462 slug, 29 doubles, 17 home runs, and 13 steals last year in 114 games. So, you know, kind of similar production to what we saw last year, but just not a guy that gets much recognition whatsoever. You know, he's a little bit older, never, you know, wasn't drafted high. He was a ninth rounder in 2023 out of Vanderbilt. But where do you have RJ Schreck ranked right now? And what do you like about the profile, James?
Yeah, so I bumped Schreck. I've liked him for a while, particularly because of how he finished last year. Like, I just think he has the ability to hit home runs in bunches. I don't know if he's a streaky hitter or not, but like, he just has these stretches where he's just hitting a home run like every three games. And if you look back to, I'm going to cherry pick some stats, but like, if you look back to like May 2nd, he's hitting 323 with 9 homers in 27 games and a 414 OBP, 4 steals, strikeout rate under 20%, walk rate over 11%. So he's old, but he's doing what like an old guy should do at that level at double A. And, you know, kind of giving me sort of like Kerry Carpenter type of vibes, you know, like an older guy who's just really, really productive, really getting to his power in games. And you write him off because he's not providing much defensive value. Maybe he gets platooned. Schreck could be on the strong side of a platoon eventually, but you know, you still need guys like Kerry Carpenter and Trevor Larnach and Matt Wallner and guys like that in Dynasty. And I think Schreck could maybe be one of those guys.
Yeah, no, he's, it's funny. I put out a tweet several days ago. I called it the all Ryan O'Hearn team or whatever I called it, just because those guys that aren't sexy whatsoever, but they just produce solid value without much fanfare, without much buzz. And I think Schreck could be that type of guy. Yeah, he's a guy, when I was digging through the Toronto system this offseason, that there's always like a guy or two in every system when I'm kind of really doing that deep dive, that I end up like, wow, you know, I like this guy more than I thought, or less than I thought. And Cole Young was one of those guys I liked less than I thought. McGonigal was one I bumped way up. But in the Toronto system, it was RJ Schreck. And he's a guy I'm trying to get over, you know, not just to see him, but I got to get over to some New Hampshire Fisher Cat games upcoming here, hopefully next week. But he's a really solid bat, because it's a good contact profile as well. You mentioned, you know, the solid power he has, and he also gets that pull side. He likes to pull the ball a good bit, a lot of fly balls. So really, you know, those ideal angles you're looking at as well. And the contact skills were, you know, about 82-83% last year, and they went down slightly this year, but still right around 80%. Swing and strike rate below 10% each of the last 2 years as well. So it's good, you know, contact, good power, you know, solid approach as well. You know, 13% walk rate, 24% strikeout rate right now. Yeah, I think you could see him get that bump to AAA pretty soon. And you know, I think he's a good value target, because that perceived value for him isn't super high right now. So maybe you can even pick him up off the waiver wire in your league, depending on, you know, how deep your league is. But yeah, pretty solid profile here for RJ Schreck. Next up here, a guy that has been one of the hottest hitters in all of the minor leagues right now, a guy that I have in my top 100 now. We'll see where you have him, James. But Mike Sirota of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he was a former, you know, draft pickup. He drafted by the Dodgers back in 2021, but he didn't sign. But then was drafted again in 2024 by the Reds, and then traded to the Dodgers. So they still ended up getting Mike Sirota, you know, 3 years later, out of Northeastern University. He's hitting 354, 443, 687 Actually, that was in low A. Overall, it's actually even better. 374, 457, 702. He's been beasting in his first nine games for high A Great Lakes as well. 12 doubles, 9 home runs in 33 games, 19 walks to 34 strikeouts. I mean, the Dodgers obviously are one of the best player development, maybe the best player development system in all of baseball. And, you know, they have all their buzzy guys, you know, the Zaire Hopes, the Josue De Paulas. But I think Mike Sirota is absolutely top 100. And I even have him pushing top 50 right now. So I'll be interested to see where you have Mike Sirota right now. He's on the IL right now, but definitely a really hot start to the season. So what are your thoughts there on Sirota?
Yeah, I mean, I would almost say the Dodgers, I wouldn't even give them like that best in player development, but maybe best in like just overall scouting, like finding,
yeah, just finding talent. Yeah.
Because they, you know, like Zaire Hope, they trade for early in his career, and he's, you know, obviously gone up since then. And I assume we both think they did the same thing with Sirota. I put him 40th overall on my update. Very, you know, I'd love to know what the reason for the IL stint is. He hasn't played since May 25th. I don't see any reporting out there on it, but if anyone knows about that, feel free to hit me up. But I'd love to know why he's on the IL. But Eric, I think it's just such a fun like conundrum for dynasty leagues. If you've got a guy like Sirota, they've never played professionally until this year, so you've got basically like 5 weeks worth of data on him, and it's like just jumping off the page. Like, I think the bat speed is just incredibly obvious to non-scouts and scouts alike, and pretty much everywhere I've seen, he gets a plus run grade, even though he's only got one steal this year. So, and he looks like a, you know, athletic, slender guy. So I assume he's still a plus runner. So we could be talking about a five category beast, but we could also, you know, maybe he misses another week or two. He comes back. He could hit like 150 with a 30% strikeout rate in his first 10 games off the IL. And then all of a sudden, the guy that you think is a top 50 prospect, maybe you can't get anywhere near that and trade for him. But like, if I have Sirota right now, I'm just holding him. And unless someone like really comes and like pries him away from me with an offer, I can't refuse. Like, I just don't want to trade him until I have a better idea of what type of talent I'm dealing with.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I think I have Sirota in, I think, at least one dynasty league, maybe two. I'd have to go look, but yeah, I have him actually. I just looked at my spreadsheet. 50th on the dot right now. You said you had him, was it 40-something you said, James?
Yeah, 40th on the dot.
40th on the dot. Okay, yeah. So we're both top 50 on him now. And yeah, I think I have no idea how all these great young, you know, pieces, assume they all, you know, stay great and be, you know, get up to the majors for the Dodgers, how everything fits in. I'm sure they'll trade some of them. You know, there'll be injuries. It'll work itself out. It always does. But yeah, the Dodgers are so phenomenal in what they do, and just getting guys like Mike Sirota, who I would like a lot in the draft as well, because I think it was kind of like the you know, Colton Cowser, and then who's the other guy that was the bigger name that was from the smaller school? I forget off that a couple years ago, but you know, guys like that I think get overlooked because they didn't play in a Power Five, you know, conference. You know, Northeastern isn't, you know, playing super great, you know, competition for the most part. At least not like, you know, the SEC or ACC, et cetera. So, you know, I think these guys get a little undervalued, but the talent is absolutely there. With Sirota, he'll turn 20 in a couple of weeks here in the middle of June. So hopefully he's back soon. So, yeah, I have not heard anything on that sort of injury either, but yeah, phenomenal start to the year for a guy that, you know, showed all the skills at Northeastern, and he's starting to show those now in the minor leagues, even if he's not stealing bags yet. But, you know, really fun player here with Mike Sirota. So I think, you know, if he comes back and kind of continues what he was doing, I think we're talking top 25 on Sirota by the end of the season. I think that's really what the talent is here with Sirota. Next name here, we'll go back to Houston. I already talked to a couple of Houston guys. Another one that's, you know, in AAA waiting for his shot, that's Bryce Matthews, you know, infielder, former first-round pick back in 2023 out of Nebraska. Plays, you know, a few different infield positions. And he's having a pretty good year in AAA as well. 42 games, 183 plate appearances, slashing .270, .399, .453, with six home runs, 16 steals, only been caught twice. And this after going 15-32 last year in 79 games. So another fun little power speed blend here for Bryce Matthews, who is just turned 23 before the season. So he'll be 23 for the entire season. Fun power speed blend. So what are your thoughts on Bryce Matthews, and how do you think he fits into the Houston plans here?
Yeah, you know, I was lower on Matthews pretty much from like before that 2023 draft up until my preseason update, I guess, or maybe my January 15th update. But he, like, it just seems very clear to me that the Jose Altuve outfield move and just the never considering, you know, trying Cam Smith at third base and moving Paredes to second base or anything like that. Like, it just very, very clear to me that Bryce Matthews is just locked and loaded as the second baseman of the future for them. So like Jeremy Peña, Bryce Matthews, I think that that is exactly what they have drawn up internally. And it's not like, I think the batting average, it's going to be tough to necessarily predict and tough to bank on, much better in OBP leagues, I think, but he's going to give a ton of power and a ton of speed for a middle infielder, and he's going to be up pretty soon. And so I think, you know, like he's a worse real life prospect than Carson Williams with the Rays, but he's almost got like a higher floor and a similar projected fantasy output to me. So it's just, you know, maybe he's a guy who's hitting 230, 235, maybe even dips down to like 220, 215 some years. Like it's not perfect. I don't have him in my top 50, but I think Matthews is going to be up sometime this summer, and he's got the tools to be a 20-plus homer, 30-plus steal middle infielder.
Yeah, no, he definitely is without, you know, he definitely has his flaws as well, but like I said, a fun power speed blend, and he's kind of shown that this year in AAA, looking at an average EV around 91 miles an hour, 44.5% hard hit rate, 14% barrel rate, but also running some below average contact rates right now as well. But never been a guy that has, you know, he can get on base too. He can work a, you know, walk at a high clip too. So maybe he's one of those guys that's more valuable in OBP formats than average formats. He's been kind of like around 100 in my rankings for, you know, probably the last year or so now, fluctuating from like 90 to like 115.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah.
You want some breaking news?
Oh, is Roman? Wait a minute. No. Is it Roman Anthony?
It's Caglione.
Caglione's getting the call right now?
Yeah.
Whoa, this is, you know, I've been waiting for a big, you know, I think we've had some things happen during the show over the last 5 years, but nothing like Jack Caglione. Oh my God. You know, all right, let's pivot. We kind of were done with Matthews anyway, and we'll get back to the other few names here in a second. But, you know, obviously Jack Caglione, phenomenal year this year, 322, 389, 593 slash, 15 home runs in 50 games between Double A, Triple A. And as I call them, you know, those are big boy home runs. Like he does not hit a cheap home run. Like this might be a top five power hitter in all of baseball right now. So, you know, let's pivot to him real quick here, James. What are your thoughts long-term on Jack Caglione?
Yeah, I have been really intrigued by him since seeing him in Arizona. Obviously very just kind of a Adonis type of a physique, and just kind of seeing him next to Nick Kurtz, it was just really fun to kind of juxtapose them in your mind and try to project out their careers. But like, I just think the chase rate in college, it just like scared so many people off, and I understand it. But he's just, you know, he started off slow in the AFL. He finished strong. And basically since like midway through the AFL, if you count big league spring training, Double A, Triple A, you know, I bet he's hitting like 330, 340 since midway through the AAA or midway through the AFL, including like big league spring training. Like, so he's just, he hasn't been slowed by any of the pitchers he's faced in, you know, almost the past calendar year. And we know, like, I think the 50 homer potential is clear. It doesn't mean he's going to get there, but like if guys like Matt Olson, Pete Alonso, like I think Jack Caglione could have a very similar fantasy career as those types of guys. So I don't know if it's going to translate right away. I know that the Royals offense needs a jolt, and I'm just really excited. We've seen better prospects than Caglione struggle initially in the big leagues, but just very excited to see how it goes.
Absolutely. And I love that this broke in the middle of this recording this podcast, because Caglione, you know, I have him top 10 at this point. I think he could be one of the best power bats in all of baseball. And you see, like, the EVs are absolutely insane. And, you know, it's just really the chase, right? Because he doesn't like strike out too often. He walks, the contact skills are pretty solid as well. So if he can just keep that chase rate, I'll take below 40%. Don't want it just like start going up in the low to mid 40s. Then you start getting really, you know, concerning levels. But, you know, if he can keep that in check, like I said, with the contact, with the, you know, good walk rate, you know, putting the bat on the ball, and his just absolutely gargantuan power that he has, Caglione could be, you know, a 40 home run guy as soon as next year. I think we'll see how that translates this year. And obviously, like you mentioned, we've seen a lot of big names struggle, so nobody's a guarantee these days. Even the surest of prospects aren't a sure thing anymore. But yeah, Jack Caglione, go, you know, if you're listening to this, if he's still available in your league, redraft, go get him, you know, immediate add in all formats. And yeah, I mean, I have him top 10 right now in Dynasty, in my prospect ranking. So yeah, this is really exciting, little Jack Caglione here. But all right, let's get back to the last few names. We got four more names for you before we get out of here. Next up, going down to Tampa Bay with Theo Gillen, first round pick in 2024, a high school player, 18th overall to the Rays. Got a few games last year. This year, 25 games in low A. Gillen slashing 274, 431, 476, 8 extra base hits, 4 home runs, 13 steals, has not been caught yet, and 22 walks, 26 strikeouts. This is a guy I've been really high on personally for, you know, ever since I was, you know, really putting together my FYPD rankings last year. I know he was, you know, a pretty decisive guy, you know, from what I saw in FYPD rankings last year, but, you know, the skills are pretty good across the board. He's running a solid 75% contact rate this year. That's an above average power speed blend as well. So you may be looking at, like, you know, maybe above average across the board, you know, if he can, you know, make enough contact here, and got that, you know, keeps the walk rate high, keeps the K rate in check. So I like him a lot. I think there's a really fantasy friendly profile here with Theo Gillen. Where do you fall kind of on the spectrum with Gillen? Are you someone that's pretty high on him, or are you on the lower end with him?
No, I really like Gillen. Honestly, like, the only flaw I see in his profile at all is that maybe he is on the strong side of a platoon initially when he gets to the big leagues, but just because it's the Rays and just because, like, he's probably not going to be their best defensive center fielder at that point. So, but I mean, he's just been awesome, and I'm going to cherry pick a sample again. So over his last 19 games, Gillen is hitting 333 with a 482 OBP, 15 strikeouts, 17 walks, 11 steals. So he's almost got as many steals as strikeouts, and three homers, three doubles. Just, you know, he's going to get promoted to high A by, you know, the middle of the season, I think. And yeah, I really like Braylor Guerrero too, Eric. I don't know how close you have those guys. I had them like right next to each other, and I kind of went back and forth. I think Gillen is kind of the higher floor, and Guerrero maybe the higher ceiling, but I just think they're both really great.
Yeah, no, I like Guerrero as well. I have Gillen a little bit higher right now. I have Gillen currently 46, and where do I have Guerrero is 73 right now. So I don't know, excuse me, 63. But yeah, I've always liked Guerrero a good bit as well, and I think it's a lot of good fun young players in that Tampa Bay system. I think those two guys leading the way. So yeah, definitely. I think both are really good targets because, I think where we have them ranked, I don't think the consensus is quite that high on these two yet, but both really fun profiles for sure. Next guy, one that I wanted to talk about, was looking at some metrics the other day and a combination of them, and Tommy White, I just realized he's having a really, really good year. In high A, and you kind of expect him to. He's a collegiate bat, out of LSU, but right now in high A, 145 plate appearances, 7 home runs, 320, 400, 572 slash line, and more walks than strikeouts too. A 10.3% walk rate to just 9.7% strikeout rate. Now, but this is a guy, plus power bat that's also making good contact right now as well. It's around 85% contact rate. About a 7% swing and strike rate. He needs that bat to carry him because he does not provide really any, value in the field. He's, well below average runner. So I don't think he's going to be more than a rogue steal here and there type of guy. But the combination of hit, power, approach here is really, really good with Tommy White. So he's a guy I'm going to give a pretty good jump to. Not top 100 yet, but I think top, I think I have probably 150 range right now. But what are your thoughts on Tommy White, James?
Yeah, I'm a little lower than him than you. I did bump him on my update, but I was lower on him probably to begin with. So I had him just barely on my top 400 coming into the year. Just the righty righty first base. The fact he's still at high A, if he were doing all this at double A, I would probably have him in the top 200 range, maybe even top 150. But
that's fair. Yeah.
I just kind of think this is what he should be doing. And we know it's about the bat. We know he's got to just mash. And it's not like the A's have a bunch of openings at the first base or DH spot. So, I don't know. I think he's fun, but I just, he's got to do it at double A first for me.
Yeah. You got to imagine he probably gets the bump to double A pretty soon here. I mean, I don't think he really has much else to prove in high A right now. So doing, good walk rate, good strikeout rate, good power right now, good contact skills. So yeah, I think he'll need to keep that going. And it's a very risky profile. I'll definitely admit that because he's not going to play, really anywhere besides first base or DH long term, and who knows if that's with the Athletics. So, you definitely have some flaws there, and definitely a risky profile. But I like the bat a lot here with Tommy White. Now let's get a couple pitchers here before we get out of here, and a guy that's really jumping up rankings, and I couldn't resist. That was it's just right on a tee there with his name, but Gage Jump of the Athletics as well. Another Athletics guy here. Nobody can touch, Gage Jump right now. And I posted it earlier today, and I'm trying to find, it was his stats over the last, I think it was six or last seven starts. Here it is. Last seven starts, 44 and two thirds innings. So that's over six innings per start. 0.60 ERA, 0.63 whip, 3.2% walk rate, and a 36.3% strikeout rate. Just absolutely, he's been good the whole year, but just especially good the last, 6 weeks or so, whatever that is, in double A right now, probably gets the bump to triple A, fairly soon here with how he's going. But I've seen people that are talking about him, being maybe the best left-handed pitching prospect in baseball now. I still have Noah Schultz having that title and, Thomas White absolutely in that discussion as well. But how high did you push Gage Jump in your rankings, James, and what are your thoughts on him long-term?
Yeah, top left-handed pitching prospect. That's a interesting one. I mentioned mentioned that in my most recent mailbag article. I had him fifth among lefties. I had him around like 84th. I had him 84th overall. I think it's just Chase Burns and Hagen Smith, and he from that draft class that have pitched at Double A. Maybe I'm forgetting someone. Maybe someone like less important, but I think it's just those three and Hagen Smith's on the IL.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Ryan Johnson got called up, obviously, but he, I don't think he's in High A now, so I don't think he's even pitching Double A technically.
But yeah, like among like starting pitchers, like high end starting pitchers from that draft, I think Jump is at least, you know, one of three or four at Double A, and obviously he's hasn't had as much success as Burns, but he's had more success than Hagen Smith. And you know, I had him behind White and Smith and Schultz and Quinn Matthews on my update among lefty starters. But part of it is I don't know if he's ever going to have a pitcher-friendly park or even a neutral park as his home park. So just tough to kind of weigh that in, like how bad's that park in Vegas going to be. Like, I don't
right.
know. I really like Jack Perkins. Jack Perkins is actually my favorite A's pitching prospect right now. I think he's got a – like what he's been able to do in the PCL, I know he's a little older, but like to have just been kind of putting up fine numbers in the PCL. I love Perkins fastball slider combo, but Jump's been fantastic. Like the only thing I can really do is nitpick his potential future home park.
Now, where do you have Jack Perkins in your rankings?
I've got Jump at 84. I've got Perkins at 80.
Okay. That's a guy that we could see, you know, make an impact this year in that athletics rotation at some point if they need an arm. So, yeah, two guys on the rise there. A lot of athletics prospects trending up this year. So, you know, Jack Perkins, you know, Jump's got, you know, perceived value is pretty high right now. But Perkins, you could probably get for a pretty low price tag right now. I don't think there's not a lot of buzz around Jack Perkins' name. So, you know, good target there as well. I have Jump. I have him as a top 10 pitching prospect now, but yeah, I still think, you know, Schultz, you know, my number one. And then I, you know, Quinn Matthews, I have him right in the same range. So I could say, I could make a case for Jump as high as maybe three among lefties, but yeah, yeah. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I could make a case for him as high as one. Like, I don't think any of those guys have gone and run away and hit or anything. Like, I think
right.
Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith have kind of had disappointing seasons so far.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. And you know, nobody's really separated themselves. I mean, all the guys that have are all, you know, righties right now, you know, like the Burns and, you know, Chandler and Sakura and all of them, all righties, obviously. So, all right, one last name on the list here before we get out of here. We'll go to Boston with Kennelly Early. You know, a lot of exciting, you know, pitching prospects right now for the Boston Red Sox that are starting to gain a lot of traction in, you know, prospect rankings and in dynasty circles. Early up in Double-A Portland right now. He's made, you know, 8 appearances, 5 starts, 33 and two-thirds innings. Only 17 hits allowed in those 33 and two-thirds innings. Really hard one to square up. You know, does have a little bit of a walk issue, 18 walks right now, but 55 strikeouts. So a 2.14 ERA and a 1.04 whip so far. Had a good strikeout rate last year as well, between High A and he got the Double A later on in the season. And now he's really starting to shoot up prospect rankings. So, you know, good 6'3", 200-pound lefty here. James, what do you like on Kennelly Early? And, you know, how high are you pushing him in your rankings?
Yeah, I mean, I like that the fastball's bumped up a little bit. He used to be kind of one of those lefties with good command. You weren't sure if he was just kind of taking advantage of younger hitters. But now I think mid-90s fastball, the walks are just kind of the one knock. Like I'm surprised by where the walk rate is. Maybe that's just him kind of learning to harness his more electric arsenal. But you know, this is a guy that has you know, displayed starter level control in the past, and has just really, really nasty off-speed stuff. And now that the fastball's up there, you can see why he's got a 40% strikeout rate. So yeah. I just think there's a really high ceiling here. And the Red Sox are churning out a lot of guys with a really high ceiling, but I think the fact that he's a lefty, the fact that he's got almost 70 innings at Double A now under his belt. I just like that his proximity is pushing up and his stuff is pushing up.
Yeah, he's had, you know, he's been really striking out a lot of guys this year. You know, in he's had eight outings so far. In seven of those, he has at least six strikeouts, and he has at least eight strikeouts in five of his eight outings so far this year. Unfortunately, I've not had a chance to see him yet because six of his eight starts have been on the road, and then the two that were at home, one day I had another obligation. I couldn't make it to that game, and then the other one was a rainy, you know, Saturday, because every Saturday in Maine has rained for the last 2 months, it feels like. So I did not think they were going to play that game, and I made other plans and they ended up playing it. So I missed out, but you know, I have plenty of opportunity to see him upcoming. Hopefully I'll get to his next home start, which I think might be upcoming later this week. I look at the schedule, but yeah, you know, Brandon Clark, Peyton Tully, you know, Kennelly Early, you know, a lot of, you know, Juan Valera, a lot of exciting pitching prospects kind of vaulting up rankings right now. And you know, Early, a little bit older, he's 23, but just turned 23, beginning of the season, April 3rd, and definitely has, you know, the strikeout upside you look for, especially in fantasy-focused rankings. So, yeah, I like Kennelly Early a lot, and I'll definitely hope to see him and get a better look at that arsenal firsthand, hopefully next week and a few more times before he gets the bump to AAA probably later this season. All right, that's going to wrap us up. A really fun episode. A lot of good prospect names here, and get some breaking Jack Caglione news right in the middle of that. That was fun, but James, always a pleasure talking to you, and really enjoyed our talk tonight.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Appreciate it.
All right. Hope everyone else enjoyed it as well, and I will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.